is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Afghanistan. The next weeks will tell the tale of the withdrawal of not only the U.S., but also the alliance, the NATO forces, and their support personnel from Afghanistan. But there are indistinct lines about what is withdrawal, what is support, what can the Afghan government in Kabul especially expect after this process is completed. How does the Afghan National Army conduct itself with the idea that the U.S. or NATO will supply air cover for certain operations, what operations and from where? All of those questions are imponderables at the moment, but we're looking at a presentation over these next weeks, so it shapes the battlefield for Afghanistan in the future. Joining me is Bill Rajow. Bill is the Long War Journal Keeper of the Flame with his colleague Tom Jocelyn and others. He's a senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. And we begin with the report from Europe. This is Europe in these last days about the expectation of the G7, the G20, NATO, the expectation for when we see this move away from Afghanistan and into a support mechanism at some remove from Afghanistan. Bill, a very good evening to you. The report from the G7 is that, or from NATO and G7, the major players in NATO are in G7. The report is that the U.S. will continue to support Afghanistan, support the Afghan National Army, and provide what looks to be air cover. However, before we get to that, what it looks like, what is the present state of Afghanistan in conflict with the Taliban? The districts that you've been illustrating these last weeks, either falling to the Taliban or threatened by the Taliban. Good evening to you, Bill.
Good evening, John. Thank you for having me on, as always. The state of play in Afghanistan is shifting radically in favor of the Taliban, particularly over the past 2 months. And before I get into the details, I'll just give a quick overview. Afghanistan has provinces. Think of them as states here in the United States. And each province has multiple districts. Think of those as counties here in the United States. So there's 407 districts in Afghanistan's 34 provinces. More or less, it's just a little bit over time, but that's what I could determine right now. And over the last 2 months, the Taliban has taken control of 30 districts. So before the last 2 months, the Taliban controlled about, I want to say 70 districts. So somewhere around a fifth or a sixth of the districts throughout Afghanistan. And keep in mind, this is spread throughout the country. It's not in one area. It's not confined to the south and east, but all throughout Afghanistan. And again, that number has bloomed over, I think I have about 101 or 102, based on my last update. And literally was updating this as you called. The Afghan government has only been able to retake 3 of them. So, these districts have fallen, it's not focused just in the south and the east, where everyone likes to think the Taliban is strong and where they really have their best shot. It's happening in the north. It's happening in provinces like Gur and central Afghanistan, where this really did not happen. Far in the west, looks like one of Afghanistan's worst districts. I have 11 or only 11 districts in Far. I have 9 of them Taliban controlled at the moment. And only 2 contested. One of the contested is where the provincial capital lies, and the Taliban briefly overtook that provincial capital in 2018, held it for almost two weeks. So this is a state of play in Afghanistan. It looks really bad. The Afghan security forces do not look to be at this moment capable of beating back this. And I think this is just the opening stages of a coming Taliban offensive. They're not even massing their forces to take the big cities. They're doing this in the remote, the more rural districts in Afghanistan, but that's laying the groundwork for what I believe to be a real coming offensive when they want to take one or more multiple provincial capitals. I've said this before, the Afghan military and the government, they need to decide where they're going to fight and how they're going to fight. They're trying to defend everything right now, and by doing that, they're defending nothing.
Let's go to Brussels. In these last hours, I read from the news report from Europe. NATO leaders meeting in Brussels on Monday largely backed President Joe Biden's decision to withdraw troops from Afghanistan, according to a senior administration official. President Biden arrived at the gathering with a vow to reaffirm the United States' commitment to a military alliance his predecessor viewed with disdain. The president placed enhanced attention on Russia and China, along with the cyber threats emanating from both countries. I want to make it clear, NATO is critically important for U.S. interests in and of itself. If there weren't one, we'd have to invent one. I just want all of Europe to know the United States is there. But Afghanistan, the report goes on, an issue NATO has been engaged on for 20 years after the U.S. invoked the Article 5 Common Defense Clause following the 9/11 terror attacks, still loomed large. I'll stop there, Bill, because NATO is rhetorically involved in Afghanistan. So the puzzle is, how is NATO going to support or continue to support Afghanistan in light of what you've just explicated, which is the Taliban is underway now to take control of the country, a slow strangulation, it looks like. We're looking at squeezing the central government. Now, what is your information about how NATO will conduct itself in the coming months? Will it be there as advisors? Will it be in communication? Is it in Kabul? What can you tell us?
Yeah, John. So, you know, one thing I'd like to say, I don't believe President Trump disdained the NATO alliance. He just wanted NATO to pay its share of the defense of Europe. And I always felt that issue has not been covered properly. But more importantly, how is NATO going to support the Afghan government? How is it going to cooperate with the Afghan government and military? The answer is as the U.S. goes, so goes NATO. The U.S. is leaving Afghanistan. So NATO is not going to be able to maintain a presence on the ground. There's just no way. The U.S. has provided the military cover for NATO to keep trainers and other support personnel inside of Afghanistan. So any type of support is going to have to happen outside of Afghanistan. NATO just won't take the risk of having its troops being captured by the Taliban. And keep in mind, the Taliban wanted the U.S. and all foreign forces out by May 1st. They threatened to attack Western forces or NATO forces that are still there, but they haven't. I think they've made the calculation. I'm certain they've made the calculation. Let's just wait for them to leave instead of poking that bear. But yeah, there's very little that NATO can do. They can provide money. They might be able to provide some training outside of country.
To that end, Bill, I want to read a report in these last days from General Todd Walters, commander of U.S. European Command, Supreme Allied Commander Europe. He's speaking to an audience at the Atlantic Council. Quote, we want to work with Afghanistan. This is the U.S. talking. We want to work with Afghanistan from a NATO perspective, and we're in the process of looking at out-of-country special forces training in certain locations to bring NATO special forces activities out of Afghanistan into a remote location, probably somewhere in Europe. How to interpret this, Bill? We're going to train Afghan special forces in Eastern Europe or Western Europe and then return them to country? Is that what you make of this?
Yeah, John, I saw a report where NATO is trying to push Qatar to host this training. So it could be in a European country, although I might doubt that because you know what I think you're going to start to see is some of these members of the special forces trying to defect and not defect, but to get asylum inside of Afghanistan. I'm sorry, inside of NATO countries. And they don't want these type of problems. I think that's why you'll see a push for it to be a Middle Eastern country. The reality is this horrific situation that we're seeing in Afghanistan has happened while the U.S. and NATO have been providing training to Afghan special forces, the commandos, and things of that nature. And these groups have been conducting a lot of their operations with U.S. forces accompanying them. As the U.S. has stopped this, these forces are becoming less and less effective. As the U.S. and NATO begins to withdraw or is completes their withdrawal from the battlefield, you know, this gets further and further over the horizon. Now, the Obama administration and Defense Department officials are talking about the over the horizon is their term for this. And by the way, it's not a term, you know, it's fine when you're talking about weapons, but it's not fine when you're talking about conducting actual military operations with troops on the ground. It's just another way of saying, hey, we'll support you from over here, but what happens in your country, that's your problem. So, yeah, over this type of over-the-horizon operations, it's not going to help. It's not even going to help on the on the margins, John. This situation, we've got to this situation with U.S. advisors supporting the commandos, going on operations with them. We've seen this deterioration. I don't get how training some special forces outside of Afghanistan is going to improve the situation any at all.
So what we have here is NATO training Afghan special forces outside of country, NATO or the U.S. providing air cover outside of country. What about the Afghan National Army, Bill, quite distinct from special forces? Will we be supporting the Afghan Army in a similar fashion, training, advisors, anything like that that you've heard?
So on the issue of providing air support for the Afghan military, I think this is the key issue. The only thing that's kept the Taliban from overrunning provincial capitals, and even then they did it four times in over the last several years, only for a brief amount of time, and the only thing that beat them back was U.S. air power. Now, I think there's a lot of misinformation about this issue. There's three types of air power, and two of them are in the same bucket here. But what they're really talking about, the U.S. talking about these over-the-horizon strikes, are really only addressing the issue of counterterrorism. And that would be specific al-Qaeda or Islamic State leaders, right? The counterterrorism operations have nothing to do with the Taliban because the U.S. government is pretending the Taliban isn't a terrorist group, even though al-Qaeda is closely allied with it. The U.N. just said that Siraj Uddin Haqqani, who is a deputy mayor of the Taliban and arguably the most influential Taliban leader, is also a member of the al-Qaeda leadership. So there's that. And that's what I think the privates do. And I think that could only be, again, we've been hunting these guys, al-Qaeda and Islamic State leaders, and this hasn't beaten these groups back. The Islamic State did suffer because the Taliban did most of the fighting against them. Then there's are we going to support the Afghan military to prevent provincial capitals, or even the capital of Kabul falling? Well, General McKenzie, the commander of CENTCOM, indicated in a statement within the last 24 hours that this isn't going to happen. And that's what you need to keep the Taliban from winning. And then in the smaller bucket in that area will the U.S. prevent Kabul from getting overrun? Because they have an interest in that because you have a U.S. embassy in the airport and you don't want a sort of a Saigon situation playing out. So, and now to answer your question about the Afghan National Army, it's nowhere near as well trained as the Afghan special forces, who are effective, but again, not effective enough to prevent the Taliban from rampaging. I think you're going to start seeing wholesale defections or, large numbers of soldiers going AWOL or going and quitting the military and joining their friendly local warlord like Dostum and Massoud and the other players in order to secure their own territory, many of these areas which are under threat.
Let's turn to the UN. When we come back, Tom, Jocelyn, and Bill Rojo had a conversation on their podcast, you can hear it, with Edmund Fitton Brown, who is coordinator of the UN Analytical Support and Sanctions Monitoring Team concerning the Islamic State, al-Qaeda, and the Taliban, the three players in Afghanistan once the U.S. and NATO have exited. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Bill Rojo, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He and Tom Jocelyn and their colleagues keep the Long War Journal. Bill and Tom also do a podcast, Generation Jihad, and in these last days have had a conversation with Edmund Fitton Brown, the coordinator of the United Nations Analytical Support and Sanctions Monitoring Team concerning the Islamic State, al-Qaeda, and the Taliban. Bill, what does Mr. Fitton Brown imagine will happen once the U.S. and NATO are gone? Does he have a picture? Is he preparing for it at the U.N.?
Well, so keep in mind that this report that is put together is provided by member states, So what the sanctions monitoring team is trying to do is to say, hey, here's the state of play in Afghanistan. Here's what the Taliban-Al-Qaeda relationship looks like. Here's with the status of foreign fighters. Here's the status of, the Islamic State, et cetera, et cetera. So they're trying to give an assessment of the state of play, who are the main actors in the terrorist movement. But the assessment, so it doesn't take it's not as forward thinking as someone like Tom and I provide. However, the information that Tom and I provide, what you can see in these reports as it's been documenting this situation over the years, that it's noting that the security situation continues to degrade, that negotiations between the Taliban and the Afghan civil society, because again, the Taliban won't directly negotiate with the Afghan government, that these negotiations really are going nowhere at the moment. Now, Mr. Fitton Brown, Edmund, who was a fantastic guest, we love his report. He's a little more optimistic on that there may be a chance for peace. When we talked to him, he did say that, you know, there is an opportunity for, you know, maybe the Taliban isn't as, you know, maybe it is looking for a political solution. Maybe it does, you know, maybe if the Taliban does see that there's a possibility that it won't be able to take all of Afghanistan. I'm, you know, Tom and I are much more pessimistic on this here, but we understand that there certainly is a lot of things that can happen. There's a lot of unknowns in this entire process. But what I'm seeing is that the Taliban is looking for reason one, and that all it has to do is finish off the Afghan government and the Afghan military, and it will reestablish its Islamic emirate of Afghanistan. But in another part of this report, though, it's very clear the Taliban Al Qaeda ties are as strong as they ever have been. And this is the report that noted that Sirajuddin Haqqani, one of the two deputy emirs of the Taliban and its most influential military and political leader, is assessed by one member state to be a leader of
ISIS. Last minute, Bill, ISIS. Now ISIS is everyone points to ISIS for the murder on the Halo Trust bomb disposal unit recently. Does anyone control ISIS? Taliban, Al-Qaeda, UN, anyone? We have about a minute.
Yeah, so there's and this is also in the UN report. There is some indication, or there's a belief out there among some member states that elements of the Islamic State have essentially been co-opted, but they've been defeated militarily by the Taliban. And so now there's just small organization, small cellular level. And there's the belief that in some cases, in order to give the Taliban plausible deniability and to destabilize things and allow the Taliban not to take credit for horrific attacks like the one against the miners, that it's sort of giving some of these Islamic State fighters the ability to carry out these attacks.
Bill Rojo, he and Tom Jocelyn keep the Long War Journal. They especially do Generation Jihad, the podcast, which I highly recommend, these last weeks of Afghanistan and the U.S. Edmund Fitton Brown joined them. That is the U.N., the U.N. presence in Kabul. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.